This is Chicken Philosophy. The Secret of the Golden Flower. Part 38. The Conclusion. This is the last episode of The Secret of the Golden Flower on Chicken Philosophy. If, rather than the last, you would like to see the first, maybe watch the whole series. It's 38 episodes, averaging about 40 minutes, I guess. What would you say? I don't know. Some of them are long, some of them are short. I mean, not many of them are short. They're all at least about 35 minutes, I think. Some of them go up to like 115, but that's rare. Anyway, the playlist is here. Enjoy your 38 episodes of the season, of which this is the finale. Oh, did you notice? That took some doing. I thought it'd be nice, rather than just doing the hanging scroll thing again. Oh, it's in the hallway. Yeah, I don't want to overdo it with too many things. It's subtle, but you can see there's a little Tibetan prayer wheel hanging off of Kes's unpublished book. Kes Fry. I interviewed him a lot of times. That's the playlist of all my interviews with Kes. It's like 30 hours of me talking to Kes. He wrote a number of the books. I mean, the number's probably six. Books that are behind me right now. I can't see any right now, but they're there. They're there. Kes Fry is an author. Anyway, he's the one that got my dad into this book. And hence, it was in my bookshelf, you know. So it's all thanks to Kes. So, I don't know. I'm overwhelmed. I'm sure Jean-Michel Jarre's concerts in China is playing in the background. Because that's classic, whatever this is. Secret of the Golden Flower on Chicken Philosophy. Today, I'm going to go with this again. I say again for the people who saw the Martin Luther yesterday. There's a river called this in China, but I don't know how related that is to you know, I don't know. There's a temple called Yangtze or Yangtze or however, you know, in Nepal. It's a Tibetan temple, so Tibetan incense, Tibetan temple, Chinese river. I don't know. Is it a Chinese river with a Tibetan name? Is it a homophone? A homograph? I don't know. I'm not here to answer questions or inform anybody about anything. I'm here to slowly inform myself by reading things and then comment on them for the amusement of anyone who might be listening or watching. So that's the incense. And, a beverage, Earl Grey tea. Am I gonna suck on the bag, you might be thinking to yourself? No. That smells like Earl Grey tea. I'm gonna put it in my ancestor's teacup, in which there is hot water. So, for the ancestors, and for the filial piety in Chinese culture, and Carl Jung being a sort of spiritual ancestor. This is the last. So after this, there's still going to be Chinese stuff happening when the white petal of the chicken wheel comes around. But it will be sans, which means without, and snooty. It'll be without Carl Jung. So Carl Jung already has his own petal. He's got the Black Books petal. Up there, see the black books. The emotional support demon in the Jung corner. I don't think you're supposed to dip it like I am, but that's kind of what we do here in India. I can go figure. You're supposed to just be patient and let it sit like a British person. Right? Okay. Oh, yeah. Of course. Can't forget. We got something to do. We gotta pull an I Ching card. We'll keep doing this too. Though Secret of the Golden Flower may be ending, this is only the beginning. Pick one. This one? This one or this one? This one? Okay. 59. Broken, solid, double broken, double solid. All right, Editor Edward, you know what to do. You know the drill. Let's turn up the music while I look that one up. Figure is Juan. Dispersion, parentheses, dissolution, end parentheses. Disperse hard attitudes with gentleness. Okay, I'll try. Seems like every other I Ching figure is telling me to do that. And I always fail. But this is the end of Secret of the Golden Flower. It's Carl Jung talking about Wilhelm. Richard Wilhelm. How bad could it be? Famous last words, right? All right, let's do this. As a rule, the specialists is a purely masculine mind. I remember leaving off on that one, and never mind the how bad could it be. It's a eulogy for his friend. But it's still Carl Jung talking in 1930 within the walls and confines of the front and back cover of this book, so it's probably going to be pretty bad. Continuing. An intellect to which fecundity is an alien and unnatural process. Editor Edward, what the fuck is fecundity? Fecundity, noun. The ability to produce an abundance of offspring or new growth. And then it says fertility, but then there's this thing talking about the difference between fertility and fecundity. Let's click that. Oh, okay. Fecundity refers to the biological capacity to reproduce, while fertility refers to the actual number of offspring produced. All right, add that to the old noodle. Therefore, it is an especially ill-adapted tool for receiving and bringing to birth a foreign spirit. Yeah, foreign Chinese and foreign women, go on and on, you know, but they're better. You know, men and Westerners are like this, and I'm going to be condescending about it. But women have things, gifts that we know not of, and them Chinese, you know, they're on a different level. I mean, with some things, with the obvious to the eye stuff, we're clearly better. But it's like, okay, Carl, just get to the eulogy about your friend. Talk about how cool he was. Don't push my buttons. Fuck. But a greater mind bears the stamp of the feminine. If you're a genius male, you have some feminine qualities. All right. Maybe you were doing some work back in the Black Book days, which from your perspective was, what, 15 years ago? I mean, where we are right now in the Black Books, 1916. Continuing. To it is given a receptive and fruitful womb, which can reshape what is strange into a familiar form. Wilhelm possessed in the highest degree the rare charism, like charisma, but without the A, the rare charism of spiritual motherhood. To it, he owed his yet unequaled ability to make incomparable translations. To me, the greatest of his achievements is the translation of and commentary on the I Ching. I'm pretty sure, yeah, this is the one we happen to have here is a different translation, but maybe he did the first translation? I don't know. Before I came to know Wilhelm's translation, I had for years worked with Lege's inadequate rendering. This is neither Lege nor. And was therefore in a position to recognize fully the extraordinary difference between the two. Wilhelm has succeeded in bringing to life again, in a new and vital form, this ancient work in which not only many sinologues, but even many modern Chinese as well, can see nothing but a collection of absurd magical formulae. This work embodies, as perhaps no other, the spirit of Chinese culture. For the best minds of China have collaborated upon it and contributed to it for thousands of years. Despite its fabulous age, it has never grown old, like a vampire, no, but still lives and operates, at least for those who understand its meaning. That we too belong to this favored group, we owe to the creative effort of Wilhelm. He has brought this work close to us through careful translation and through his personal experience, both as a pupil of a Chinese master of the old school and as an initiate in the psychology of Chinese yoga. Bag out and cheers. Tastes just like my ancestors. To whom the practical application of the I Ching was a constantly renewed experience. But with all these rich gifts, Wilhelm has also burdened us with a task whose magnitude we may at the moment only guess at, but cannot fully visualize. Anyone who, like myself, has had the rare good fortune to experience in a spiritual exchange with Wilhelm the divinatory power of the I Ching cannot for long remain ignorant of the fact that we have touched here an Archimedean, Editor Edward.
An Archimedean point is a hypothetical, stable viewpoint from which one can perceive objective truths or reason reliably. It's often described as a fixed point or starting point. This point is not a literal location, but rather a mental or physical framework. The concept is related to Archimedes' famous saying about using a lever and fulcrum to move the earth. So that was not Merriam-Webster, that was the Google AI bot, but I think we can take its word for it.
Thank you, Editor. I knew that. Point from which our Western attitude of mind could be shaken to its foundations. It is no small service to have given us, as Wilhelm did, such an all-embracing, richly colored picture of a foreign culture. But much more important is the fact that he has transmitted to us the living germ of the Chinese spirit, capable of working an essential exchange in our view of life. We are no longer reduced to being admiring or critical observers, but have become participants in the Eastern spirit, to the degree to which we have succeeded in experiencing the effective potency of the I Ching. The function on which the use of the I Ching is based at first sight appears to be in sharp contradiction to our Western way of scientific causal thinking. Excuse me, causal thinking. Thinking casually. I was just casually thinking. Sorry. In other words, it is extremely unscientific. In fact, taboo. If that music made you go, oh, taboo, comment below. I want to know how many people recognize the connection between that music and the word taboo. Of course, you could just look at the description where it shows the credits of the music credits, and you'll go, oh, oh, and then you could look into it and go, what, there was a game in 1986 for the Nintendo? Holy shit, that's weird and funny. So, never mind. I guess the cat's out of the bag. What cat? What bag? What are you talking about? In fact, taboo, and therefore outside the scope of our scientific judgment, indeed incomprehensible to it. Some years ago, the then president of the British Anthropological Society asked me how I could explain the fact that so highly intellectual a people as the Chinese had produced no science. I replied that this must really be an optical illusion. Might be with Carl on this one. Because the Chinese did have a science, whose standard work was the I Ching. But that did what? But that the principle of this science, like so much else in China, was altogether different from our scientific principle. The science of the I Ching, indeed, is not based on the causality principle, no, the causality principle, but on a principle, parentheses, hitherto unnamed because not met with among us, end parentheses, which I have tentatively called the synchronistic principle. I love these concepts that are basically Jung like their concepts straight out of his head. So they're a misunderstanding, because you can't really, maybe some get closer, but I think of all the people that are making reference to and using Jungian terms, like, for example, the shadow or shadow work, you know, just to name one, don't necessarily, like, everybody has a slant. Maybe this is kind of, it's built in. I don't know. It's interesting. Like, am I ever going to get back to the original thread of this tangent? I don't know. But in Tibetan Buddhism, like, there's a whole thing where if you just say, hey, I found a treasure in a dream, like, you know, it's a missing part of the teachings of one of these great bodhisattvas who lived thousands of years ago. People, I mean, not everybody, but there, like, people will say, well, what is it? You know, like, and you, if it's, like, good enough, you know, or even if it's not, people will be like, great, we'll build a temple in your honor and paint your face and, you know, you'll be the founder of the new lineage, you know? Whereas, for example, in, like, institutionalized Constantinian Christian Orthodoxy, if you come along and you're like, hey, they'll be like, okay, Joseph Smith, go back to Utah. even the guy who rebelled against the guy who rebelled against the guy who rebelled against the Catholic Church would say, yeah, go back to Utah, but there's always Utah, you know, if no place else. But the point is, what am I talking about? I don't know. See what happened? Okay, let's go back to the beginning. Where did we go off on that? Okay, so Jung looks at Chinese culture, and he's like, there's a thing there. There's no word for it in German. Or I don't know if he spoke any other languages. Swiss? Swedish? Is that a language? Swedish is a language. Swiss? Is Swiss a language? I don't think so. Anyway. We don't have, there's no word for that in the West. It's just, that's a concept that I see, that nobody else sees, that most of the Chinese don't see. But the great masters that I see, there was a guy who called himself a great master, and he nodded when I tried to put it in my own words. And so therefore, I'm going to call it this, and this is its definition. So he had an approximation, and he made it a standard. And then a million other people look at that standard and approximate it and try to use it in speech. So if I'm coming from a Constantinian linguistic perspective or idea perspective or knowledge perspective, or perhaps what he would be calling like the strictly scientific, the narrow view scientific, everything is bullshit except for what falls into these between these two lines scientific, would be more of like a Constantinian way of approaching it, where the more tantric, Tibetan way of approaching it would be like, oh, that's your truth? Cool. Yeah, well, I think we can stick it on here. And yeah, now your truth is part of the great truth. And congratulations. We'll build a statue in your honor, whatever. So the Tibetan tantric in this example would build a statue of Carl Jung, but not the Constantinian Orthodox scientist. There's a spectrum, and where you want it. It's the moral of the story. No, it's not the moral of the story. Okay, my occupation with the psychology of unconscious processes long ago necessitated my casting around for another explanatory principle. Because the causality principle seemed to me inadequate. Oh, right, synchronicity and causality don't really think, I get it. Okay. I mean, unless there's time travel involved, like the effect precedes the cause, you know? Because the causality principle seemed to me inadequate for the explanation of certain remarkable phenomena of the unconscious. Thus, I found that there are psychic parallelisms which cannot be related to each other causally, but which must stand in another sort of connectedness. I love how Carl, like people are like, hey, Carl, could you write an introduction to this, like, Chinese script about Taoist alchemy? And he's like, sure. Let me take this opportunity to tell you about this concept I've been working on called the collective unconscious. And it's like, okay, great, Carl, great. Thank you for commenting on the secret of the golden flower. Hey, we wanted you to give a eulogy, like to remember Richard Wilhelm. Could you say a few words about Richard Wilhelm? Sure. First, let me take this opportunity to explain to you this concept I've been working on called the collective unconscious. You know, okay, preach, you know, I mean, like in the evangelical goes around preaching the good news of the Lord, but a person who's confident in their own ideas will go around telling you that, you should click the link below. And you can start with Thomas on the Wolf. It's very short. I think it's only $7. You can get this, you can hold it in your hand, you can say, okay, so this is Edward's first published book. What does it say? You can read it, you can think about it, and then when you're done, you can decide whether you want to dive into the mouse books or dive into the poetry books. Just want to take this opportunity to mention that since we're talking about Secret of the Golden Flower. What was I talking about? No, it doesn't matter. Continuing. Thus, I found that... Yeah, we read that already. This connection seemed to me to lie mainly in the relative simultaneity of the events. Synchronicity, yeah. Therefore, the expression, quote, synchronistic, end quote. And he's, it's like he's a time traveler. He came up to our time and realized that every, like, New Age nut and their dog and their aunt and whatever lady down the street is like, whoa, synchronicity, and they're listening to her. I don't want this to get blocked in Russia, so, but you get the idea. We'll continue playing the instrumental version lightly in the background at a volume that YouTube finds acceptable. I think what was happening was a lot of the time, like, the neighbors are listening to a song, and so someone would be like, I want to come on and talk to you about my left foot or whatever people talk about on YouTube, and it'd be like, blocked! Be like, why? Because your neighbors are playing the radio, you know. So if it's below a certain volume, then if I keep it all below a certain volume, then it just says, no copyright issues. If this goes viral and 1,000 people watch it, we'll give you $15. No, I haven't signed up for the monetization thing yet. If I did, I don't know if that would mean more. I think once it gets popular enough, they start putting ads whether you want it or not. I have one video with, 19,000 views, and there's an ad in the middle of it. Nothing I can do about it unless you pay for premium. Speaking of Richard Wilhelm, it seems indeed as though time, far from being an abstraction, is a concrete continuum. Band name? Anyone? Which contains qualities or basic conditions manifesting themselves simultaneously in various places in a way not to be explained by causal parallelism, as, for example, in cases of the coincident appearance of identical thoughts, symbols, or psychic states. I mean, you could, like, if you add some more layers to it, you could say it's a causal thing. God wanted these 10 people to all think of a screwdriver at the same time. Therefore, he caused them all to think of a screwdriver at the same time. And you atheists call it synchronicity. See what I did there? It's not useful. I'm just saying, you know, a person could explain away within a causal paradigm synchronicity. This is what I'm saying. Not just in that way, but in other ways too. But why? Who cares? I don't know. Not me. Another example would be the simultaneity of Chinese and European periods of style. A fact pointed out by Wilhelm. You know what else would explain that? The Silk Road. I mean, it's been there a long time. There's been exchange of ideas and everything else between the farthest east and the farthest west for a long, long time, and probably before that. Silly. 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 There's one area where the people have been going through it. Oh, shoot, I forget where that is. There's like it's not the most diverse place, but it's like everybody in the world is like, shares some high percentage, I mean, relatively high percentage, like 1/64th. Everybody shares 1/64th or 1/32nd of their DNA. Well, aside, not counting the 99.9 that all humans have in common or whatever, but like their genes they have in common with the people in this one area because of the Silk Road, because so many people are going through there and there's so much intermarriage, and so the people who live there are related to everybody in the world because enough people travel the fucking road that Carl Jung is apparently unaware exists. He thinks he's creating it or inventing it, and on a certain level maybe he was, on a certain level. That's that phrase, on a certain level, is doing a lot of heavy lifting there. He's for the California, you know, guy. What? Carl Jung's like, hey, you heard of China? Yeah, it's foreign, isn't it? Yeah, but, you know, let me create a road. We can call it the Silk Road between your mind and the ideas in Chinese culture. It's like, whoa, you invented that, Carl. I know. I call it synchronicity. That's cool, man. But he wasn't the first. I'm talking shit. I'm sorry. Never mind. Just ignore everything I'm saying. Remarkable. Thus I found... Yeah, we said all that. This connection seemed to me to lie mainly in the relative simultaneity of the events. Therefore, the expression, quote, synchronistic. Yeah, we get it, Carl. End quote. You're a genius. You're brilliant. Came up with that all by yourself. So cool. That's the coolest thing about you, actually. If you coined the term synchronistic, that's like Tellier Desjardins, predicting the use of the term cyber in reference to the brain of the earth. Anyway, it seems indeed as though time, far from being an abstraction, is a concrete continuum which contains... how many times have we read the same few lines? I don't know. They could not have been causally related to one another. Astrology would be an excellent example of manifest synchronicity if it had at its disposal thoroughly tested findings. But at least, it depends on who you ask. A lot of people say, well, you know, I've seen a lot of times when the moon was void of course, right in this aspect with Mercury, and every fucking time somebody stubs their toe, and so it's real. I've seen enough. And, you know, maybe they have. Maybe science is solid. Never mind. But at least there are some facts thoroughly tested and backed up by a wealth of statistics which make the astrological problem seem worthy of philosophical investigation. Parentheses. Psychology has no difficulty in recognizing this. This is where Carl Jung sneaks the astrology into the American school system or something, right? Since astrology represents the summation of all the psychological knowledge of antiquity. And parentheses. I mean, kind of. Or at least a kind of filing system, like the Tree of Life or whatever. You know, like a way of organizing a lot of complex ideas into something that you can, you know, like alphabetizing your files is kind of, does the same thing as that. Tea, Earl Grey, lukewarm. The fact that it is possible to reconstruct in adequate fashion a person's character from the data of his nativity shows the relative validity of astrology. However, the birth data never depend on the actual astronomical constellations, but upon an arbitrary, purely conceptual timeline, because by reason of the precision of the equinoxes, the spring point has long ago passed on beyond 0 degree Aries. Carl Jung exists in a world where sidereal astrology doesn't exist. And neither does the Silk Road. All right. You know, this is kind of instilling me with confidence, seeing Carl Jung on the Dunning-Kruger spectrum as he is. Because I know I am. Oh, wait, now I'm not, because they said I was. Oh, wait, now that I realize that, then I am again. Oh, wait. Anybody remember that? Let's do a flashback. Fuck it. I heard you were saying that because of the Dunning-Kruger effect, you think you're an expert even though you're ignorant? That's right. But if you're aware that you're ignorant, that means you don't think you're an expert. Oh my God, you're right. And if we're talking about the Dunning-Kruger effect, if you think that you're ignorant, then you're more likely to be an expert. I knew it! I am an expert! You fucked it up. Now you're an ignoramus again. Shit! Alright, I guess I just have to accept that I'm as dumb as a brick. And now you're not. Oh, cool! Yeah, so that happened once. Anyway, okay. Insofar as there are any really correct astrological diagnoses, they are not due to the effects of the constellations, but to our hypothetical time qualities. In other words, Whatever is born or done in this moment of time has the quality of this moment in time. Did I fuck it up again? Because there's tropical and sidereal, and one of them is based on the constellations, and one of them isn't, and Vedic is more like the one and not like the other, and people assume that Western astrology, which is largely true, is based on the precession of the equinoxes and not on the constellations in the sky. I actually prefer that, because for me, dawn and spring equinox define the beginning of the wheel starting at Aries, not whatever the Babylonians saw when it happened to be the spring equinox, you know. Right? No, I don't know. Everybody has their opinions on that, or lack thereof. In other words, whatever is born or done in this moment of time has the quality of this moment in time. Oh, that was almost profound. If Dogen were talking, I'd stop and hum for a minute or whatever. This is also the basic formula for the use of the I Ching. One gains knowledge of the hexagram characterizing the moment by a method of manipulating yarrow stalks or coins, a method depending on sheer chance, or if you're old school, boiling a tortoise shell or burning it. They used to put tortoise shells on the fire. I like to think the tortoise wasn't in them anymore. I mean, that's still sad. Leave the tortoises alone, I Ching people. Old-timey I Ching. Back then, everybody was doing fucked up shit to tortoises. I'm not calling out the I Ching people specifically, but leave the tortoises alone. That's all I'm saying. And the turtles. The turtles are the ones in the water, right? The tortoises walk around on land. But some of them do both. It gets confusing. Some of them are very old. Like the one in The Neverending Story, or in the Terry Pratchett universe, or whatever. One gains knowledge of the hexagram characterizing the... This is also the basic formula for the use of the I Ching. One gains knowledge of the hexagram characterizing the moment by a method of manipulating... We read that already. As the moment is, so do the runic stocks fall. The only question is, did the old king Wen and the Duke of Cho, 1,000 years before Christ, interpret correctly the accidental picture made by the fallen stocks? As to this, experience alone can tell. At his first lecture at the Psychological Club in Zurich, Wilhelm, at my request, because I was the head of it, I was kind of in a position where I could take advantage and go, well, I'm the boss around here, so hey, I'm going to roll my eyes back and talk to vampire ladies and come up with the collective unconscious and the shadow, and you all just have to swallow it and say, well, I guess it's Jungian. Change the world, that guy. Oh, sorry. Wait, I got distracted. Wilhelm, at my request, demonstrated the method of consulting the I Ching and at the same time made a prognosis which, in less than 2 years, was fulfilled to the letter and with unmistakable clearness. This fact could be further confirmed by many parallel experiences. However, I am not concerned here with establishing objectively the validity of the prophecies of the I Ching, but take it as a premise, just as my deceased friend did. Good eulogy call. No, he's still going. Therefore, I am only going to discuss the amazing fact that the qualitas occulta of the time moment became legible by means of the hexagram of the I Ching. One is dealing with the relationship of events, not only analogous to astrology, but even essentially related to it. The moment of birth corresponds to the stocks that are thrown, the constellation to the hexagram, and the astrological interpretation arising from the constellation corresponds to the text allocated to the hexagram.
Yeah.
I can see what you did there. That's true. So you could say being born is like throwing the I Ching, or the divining, the divination. But in order to find out the answer in the latter case, you have to watch a person live their entire life from beginning to end. And then you go, oh, it's all the I Ching figures and more. And then, anyway. The type of thought built on the synchronistic principle, which reached its apex in the I Ching, is the purest expression of Chinese thinking in general. Okay. In the West, this thinking has been absent from the history of philosophy since the time of Heraclitus, and appears and only reappears as a faint echo in Leibniz. However, it is the interim. In the interim, it was not extinguished, but continued to live in the twilight of astrological speculation and remains today at this level. At our point of time, the I Ching responds to the need of further development in us. Occultism has enjoyed a renaissance in our times, which is virtually without a parallel. The light of the Western mind is nearly darkened by it. I mean, we can kind of see, like, I don't know, it's interesting, like, because when you look at the occultists of before, during, and after when he's talking, a lot of them, you can say, oh, that's very interesting. Oh, okay. You had that experience? Okay, cool. And you wrote that, oh, that's a good theory. That's a good use of that, yeah, those correspondences and that diagram for that exercise. And, oh, that's beautiful. People will be using that for 100 years. How about you, Carl? And he's like, oh, there's a vampire lady. There was a cross with rusty nails on it. It was terrible. And I was the devil, or maybe I was God. And occultism, man. It's dark and dangerous, those occultists. No, it's you, Carl. You're projecting your shadow on other people again. Stop it. What was it Bo Burnham said?
And I think that, oh, if I'm self-aware about being a douchebag, it'll somehow make me less of a douchebag. But it doesn't. Self-awareness does not absolve anybody of anything.
Yeah, just because you know that people do it doesn't make it okay that you do it with all your might at times. All right, and I'm sure I do it too. So, 3 fingers pointing back, 1 forward, 1 up at God. That's how you do it when you accuse. I am not thinking now of our seats of learning and their representatives. I am a physician and deal with ordinary people, and therefore I know that the universities have ceased to act as disseminators of light and have become inseminators of light? No, probably not. That's not where he's going with this. People have become weary of scientific speculation and rationalistic intellectualism. They want to hear truths which broaden rather than restrict them, which do not obscure but enlighten, which do not run off them like water but penetrate them to the marrow. Damn, I don't know if I can say that on YouTube, Carl. This guy can write a romance novel. This search threatens to lead a large, if anonymous, public into wrong paths. Careful, anonymous. Don't go down the wrong path. Don't start emulating people like that fucking guy in the Alan Moore comic that tried to blow up Parliament. When I think of Wilhelm's achievement and significance, I am always reminded of Anquilatit Duperon, the Frenchman who brought the first translation of the Upanishads to Europe at the very point when, after almost 1,800 years, an unheard-of thing happened. The goddess of reason drove the Christian godhead from the throne in Notre Dame. Today, when far more unheard-of things happen in Russia than once did in Paris, when in Europe itself the Christian symbol shows such weakness that even the Buddhists consider this the right moment for sending missions to Europe, it is Wilhelm, representing as he does the soul of Europe, who brings us new light from the East. Maybe talk to the missionaries, the Buddhist missionaries. They're actually like, hey, we got the wisdom from the East. And it's like, never mind, Chinese Buddhists. I want to talk to my German friend about this obscure text from 300 years ago that you guys were like, eh, weird. Never mind. This was the cultural task to which Wilhelm felt himself called. He had realized how much the East could give for the healing of our spiritual distress. A poor man is not helped by having more or less generous alms pressed upon him, although this may be his wish. He is much better helped if we show him how, by work, he can free himself permanently of his need with a bare bodkin. Oh, wait, that was Hamlet. That's more of a Western take. Or, what's her name? The lady who tears off her own head and drinks her own blood and overcomes samsara and becomes enlightened. Hamlet and good old what's her name? I can't believe I forgot your name. You're right over there. It's a statuary. Unfortunately, the spiritual beggars of our time are too inclined to accept the alms of the East in specie, that is, to appropriate unthinkingly the spiritual possessions of the East, and to imitate its way blindly. Is this 1930 or 2025, Carl? You sound like you're on a Reddit. That is the danger about which it is, or maybe they're imitating you. But, like people imitate Martin Luther. There's the echo of Carl Jung is still talking. That is the danger about which it is possible to give too many warnings. And it is what? Impossible to give too many warnings. No, I think you've managed to give too many warnings, Carl. It's obnoxious. It's like reading Journeys Out of the Body by Robert Monroe, and you're like, wow, this is really cool. Then you get to the chapter with those little kids, and you're like, you lose the ability to astral project permanently just by reading about it. Like, fucking. He's like, but watch out, because there's shit out there. This one time, according to my mom, she and my dad used to astral project. They'd astral project together. It was just a thing they both did. Then my dad was like, I can't do it anymore. And like a period of time went by where he's like, yeah, I don't know. I can't do it. And then one night she was astral projecting and my dad was there in the experience. And he was like, well, you better watch out. You might run into a stingray or a shark or this or that. And all these like sea creatures started appearing in the room up in the air. And she woke up terrified and she was like really mad at him. And he was like, what? What did I do? Anyway, so too many warnings, Carl. Sometimes it's law of attraction. If you give someone a psychedelic substance and you tell them this is going to be really good, you're going to, like, at part of it, you might be like, oh my God, it's a little bit much, but just know that the good is coming. They'll be like, okay, I can't wait. And they'll probably have a good trip unless somebody honks a horn or something outside, you know. But if you tell them, like, be careful, man. Don't, like, think about anything unpleasant. Like, don't, like, you have to be, you just have to be fucking careful, man. Okay, here it is. Take it. They'll probably have a bad trip. So Carl's giving everybody a bad trip. But he's doing it out of love. Misguided love. Spiritual Europe is not helped by what is merely a new sensation or a new titillation of the nerves. What it has taken China thousands of years to build cannot be grasped by theft. Okay, Carl, I have a concept for you. What it has taken humans thousands of years to build can be looked at, experienced, smiled about, criticized, made art over, made little groups to practice or talk about, little book clubs. In present day, humans in present day can experience on various levels things that it took humans thousands of years to build. Through certain eyes like yours and admittedly a number of people alive today, they can't look at that without seeing like the horrors of colonialism. And yeah, I mean, you could say, well, but they're connected. The reason why Carl's even talking about this is because of the opium wars, because they wouldn't, So there's a karmic connection between the secret of the golden flower and going zzz, and what that one red coat general did with the fucking those kids in the well, fucking pervert. Sadistic bastard. Is there a connection between those two things? I mean, if that's the case, like, there's a connection between every two things. And if, like I said, 99.9% of the same DNA between Europeans and Chinese. I don't know. Like, I question a lot of people's assumptions about where the borders are on who's allowed to be interested in what based on who came up with it and who is reading your translation of it. I don't know. I'm just saying it's not as cut and dry as Carl or a lot of the people on the internet want it to be, in my opinion. But the other people that are echoing similar opinions as that are people I hate. I absolutely despise. Like most of the people. Like Prager fucking You has Rob Schneider on there saying basically what I just said. And I'm like, fuck.
The idea of cultural appropriation is just another way to stifle people and to attack people.
You know, like sometimes it's a really gross feeling having a nuanced perspective because you kind of, it's like you see someone, I like this guy. But I don't entirely line up with his script. Part of my script is more similar to Rob Reiner on PragerU. Ew! Get it off me! It's sticky. Right? It's not so binary. That's, you know, like people in their group thinks. We must instead earn it in order to possess it. Okay. Yeah. Sure. What the East has to give us should be merely help in a work which we still have to do ourselves. I mean, yes and no, because each is an individual. So if one individual, their path is to join a Buddhist monastery, become a Taoist monk or whatever it is, where they just jump ship and they're like, you know what? I was agnostic atheist, formerly Protestant or Catholic or Jewish in New Jersey before, but now I'm in Sri Lanka, and I've got an orange robe on, and I'm going to do this for the rest of my life. Then I don't think that you should look at that person and say, oh, but you should have done it more subtly and bring and integrate elements of your own culture while you do it. And it's like, yeah, you're going to kind of do that anyway. Hence, Chicken Philosophy, not just Buddhist Books Podcast, right? Anyway, I don't know. Carl, what are you going on about? Of what use to us is the wisdom of the Upanishads or the insight of Chinese yoga? The sentence goes on, but looking at life, the universe, and everything from a different perspective. Besides, I'm a little ant, there's this thing called God, he's grandpa, he has a beard, the Jews are involved, and I should feel guilty, and heaven and hell. Like, if someone comes along and says, like, recite some of the ideas from the Upanishads, and you go, wow, whoa, man, that blew my mind. That changed my whole perspective, you know, like, cool. And then Carl comes along and like,
Well, you shouldn't do that.
Like,
you have to earn it.
Fuck you, Carl. Continuing. Carl and everyone else. I mean, pretty much. Pretty much. If we desert the foundations of our own culture as though they were errors outlived and, like homeless pirates, settle with thievish intent on foreign shores. Carl, you're talking about me right now. The insights of the East, above all, the wisdom of the I Ching, has no meaning when we close our minds to our own problems, when we veil from ourselves our real human nature with all its dangerous undercurrents and darkness. The light of this wisdom shines only in the dark, not in the glaring searchlight of the European theater of consciousness and will. The wisdom of the I Ching originated from a background whose horror we can faintly suspect if we read of Chinese massacres. Was that before the I Ching? I think a lot of that was after the I Ching. Of the sinister power of Chinese secret societies, of the nameless misery, the hopeless filth and vices of the Chinese masses. Carl, I thought you were like cool. Now you're just, okay. Oh, Jesus Christ. We need to have a correctly three-dimensional life if we wish to experience Chinese wisdom as a living thing. Good luck on that. Stop writing this and go try doing that, Carl. Jesus, get back to us in another 30 years. Therefore, we first have need of European truths about ourselves. Our way begins in European reality and not in yoga practices, which would only lead us astray as to our own reality. I can see this being read aloud by someone's fucking uncle at Thanksgiving, you know. Like, but Uncle So-and-so, the young lady with the yoga mat replies, fuck you, Carl. Right? Yeah. We must continue Wilhelm's work of translation. Wait, what? Yeah. Okay. Our way begins in European reality and not in yoga. We just read that. Okay. We must continue Wilhelm's work of translation in a wider sense if we wish to show ourselves worthy pupils of the master. Just as he translated the spiritual treasure of the East into European meaning, we should translate this meaning into life. Okay, thank you for starting the ball rolling on that 100 years ago, Carl. Wilhelm translated the central concept, the Tao, as meaning. To translate meaning into life, that is to realize the Tao, would be the task of the pupil. But the Tao will never be created with words and wise precepts. Do we know exactly how the Tao develops in us or around the world? Oh, tell us, Master. Tell us. Tell us, Carl. You clearly understand these things in a way that goes so far beyond my comprehension that I deign not even think about it. Unless I earn it. How do I earn it? Ew, Carl, I don't want to do that. Is there another way? What if I give you someone else to do that with? Oh, hey, there's a power cut. But where shall we begin? That's what I'm saying. Is it by imitation, by reason, by acrobatics of the will? I'm guessing not. We feel that all this is ridiculously incommensurate with the task. But where shall we begin with this next task? Will Wilhelm's spirit be in us? Or with us if we do not solve this problem in a truly European way, that is, in reality. Carl, we don't know Wilhelm. He's your friend. Maybe keep this inside voice in your black books and, like, realize there's other people, types of people and everything. I'm not all just defined by the fucking stamp of our nation. Or must this, in the last analysis, remain a rhetorical question whose answer is lost in applause? Everybody clapping, nobody gets to hear the explanation about what is the Tao? Well, Wilhelm thought it meant meaning. Okay. It's the first time I've heard that translation. Let us look towards the east. But you told us not to. There is an overwhelming fate. There, an overwhelming fate is fulfilling itself. Whatever was going on in the news in 1931, Carl thinks is related to the ancient Chinese existence. All right. It's different from what's on the news in 2025, so it's just kind of like disorienting how, like, fucking backwards Carl is in today's day and age. I really want to finish this because I don't ever want to read it again. And I mean the Secret of the Golden Flower, the actual translation of the Secret of the Golden Flower from Chinese and English, I really enjoyed that. There's one or two of the ideas being put forth by Carl that are also interesting. Most of what he's saying is infuriating. And when we finish this, we never have to read it again. And he doesn't get on my nerves as much in the black books for some reason. I think because it's close to home, because my dad was born in China and my identity as growing up was that I was more Chinese than American. Will Wilhelm's spirit be with us? Who cares? This is a you thing, Carl. Or must this, in the last analysis, remain a rhetorical question whose answer is lost in applause? Oh, the question is, will Wilhelm's spirit be with us? And the answer is, will we just never know because it'll be lost in applause? How about none of the above, Carl? I'm sure Wilhelm's spirit is with you. You guys were friends. That's how that works. The rest of us don't give a shit. Thank you for translating this. We read it. We didn't get what you got out of it. You got a lot of things out of it that we didn't get. Let us look towards the east. There's an overwhelming fate. European cannon have burst open the gates of Asia. European science and technology, European secularism and greed flooded China. We have conquered the East politically. Do you know what happened when Rome overthrew the Near East politically? The spirit of the East entered Rome. Mithra became the Roman military god. Okay, this stuff is, that's where you get the backflow, where you get your granddaughter is like, yeah, but I'm all about Shiva, Grandpa, not Jesus. Jesus is cool and all, but me personally, Shiva. And he's like, right? Meanwhile, here in Goa, the spirit of the East, it's back on, entered Rome. Mithra became the Roman military god. And out of the most unlikely corner of Asia Minor came a new spiritual Rome. I don't know what he's talking about, and I don't care enough to reread it. Would it be unthinkable that the same thing might happen today and find us just as blind as were the cultured Romans who marveled at the superstitions of the Christoi? Is it to be noted? It is to be noted that England and Holland, the two main colonizing powers in Asia, I guess since the sinking of the Spanish Armada, they were the original gangsters, but are also the two most infected with Hindu theosophy. Yeah, and other things about Hinduism that could do without the use of the word theosophy, unless you're using it generally and not referencing the organization, which would have been something you guys were aware of. England and Holland, right. I know that our unconscious is full of Eastern symbolism. The spirit of the East infected, fuck you. The spirit of the East is really at our gates. Therefore, it seems to me that the translation of meaning into life, the search for the Tao, has already become a collective phenomenon among us, and that to a far greater extent than is generally realized. A most significant sign of the times, it seems to me, is that Wilhelm and the Indologue Hauer were asked to lecture on yoga at this year's Congress of German Psychotherapists. Let us realize what it means for a practicing physician who deals directly with a suffering and therefore receptive person to establish contact with an Eastern therapeutic system. Thus the spirit of the East penetrates through all our pores and reaches the most vulnerable places of Europe. Yay for what he's describing, and boo for the way he's describing it. Carl's like,
yeah, man, all these Eastern stuff in the West. All I'm saying is don't look at that. Look at it. Don't look at it. Look at yourself. You're European, you colonizing bastard.
It's all he's saying. Not much else. He didn't even like explain the square inch door window in the square foot house at all ever. He's going on about this shit. All right, whatever. I really can't wait to be finished with this. I would like to not talk about this ever again. I feel like I've talked about it more on the Secret of the Golden Flower series on Chicken Philosophy than I ever need to in my life. So I think maybe I can retire from getting annoyed at the overly simplistic, judgmental assholes that whatever. It's like, I mean, and it's annoying because it resonates with both sides, where you have people saying we should be sensitive to, you know, cultural, we don't want to cultural appropriate here on the left, so we should be Vikings. We should just get interested in Celtic and Nordic things and not presume to even begin to understand what's going on in the East or China or India or anything. And then you have the other side that are like, I won't do the accent. Not all Southerners are Republicans. But they also agree that white people should stick to white people things and non-white people should stick to non-white people things, but for other reasons. But they're in agreement, and they're in agreement with Carl, mostly, kind of. They might have issues with some of the specifics of what he's saying. Okie dokie, let's finish this dang thing. Okay, it could be a dangerous infection, but perhaps it is also a remedy. We'll never know. The Babylonian confusion of tongues in the West created such a disorientation that everyone longs for simpler truths. Do you mean the Tower of Babel? I don't know if you can call that Babylonian exactly. Not to head alone for general, what? Or at least for general ideas which speak not to the head alone, but to the heart as well, which give clarity to the contemplating mind and peace to the restless pressure of the feelings. Like ancient Rome, we again today are importing every form of exotic superstition in the hope of discovering therein the right remedy for our disease. Human instinct knows that all great truth is simple, and therefore the man who is weak in instinct assumes great truth to exist in all cheap simplifications and platitudes, memes. Or, as a result of his disappointment, he falls into the opposite error of thinking that great truth must be as obscure and complicated as possible. We have today a Gnostic movement, do tell, because this was 15 years before they found the scriptures, in the anonymous masses, which exactly corresponds psychologically with the Gnostic movement 1900 years ago. Okay. Then, as today, solitary wanderers like the great Apollonius spun the spiritual threads from Europe back to Asia, perhaps to remotest India. I'm not going to... It's a silly comparison. I'm just going to move on because I want to finish this. Looked at from a historical perspective, I see Wilhelm in the guise of one of those great Gnostic intermediaries who brought the cultural heritage of Asia Minor into contact with the Hellenic spirit and thereby caused a new world to rise out of the ruins of the Roman Empire. Then, as now, the continent of the spirit was inundated, leaving only single peaks projecting like islands from the limitless flood. Then, as now, all sorts of devious paths beckoned the mind, and the wheat of false prophets flourished. All right. I mean, that also happened in Germany under
Protestant Christianity 300 years before what you're talking about, but I don't know. False prophets flourish wherever, whenever, using whatever. Buddhism, Judaism, Christianity, atheism, anyism, noism, whatever. I mean, are there real prophets is the question, right? Or at least like usefully focused geniuses who see patterns that the others don't? Is that a prophet? Maybe. In the midst of the jarring disharmony of European opinion, to hear the simple language of Wilhelm, the messenger from China, is indeed a blessing. It has obviously been schooled in the plant-like spontaneity of the Chinese mind. He means it as a compliment, Chinese folks, if you're watching. Plant-like mind. He's talking about the Chinese people that live in his head. And when he says that, he means it as a compliment, I think. So, never mind. Why am I defending Carl Jung? All right, what are we doing? The plant-like spontaneity of the Chinese mind, which is able to express profound things in plain language, it discloses something of the simplicity of great truth and of deep meaning. It has transplanted in the soil of the West a tender seedling, the golden flower. I mean, I will say, Carl's doing a really nice job of like building up and building up and building up the profound importance and significance and the grand historical tapestry of the threads of humanity. This one fucking translation of this one text, you know, it's like, okay, Carl, you really like Wilhelm. I'm assuming you were lovers. I mean, that just based on, you know, like, we read it. It was okay, but don't know if we read the same book. That's all I'm saying. Only Wilhelm was a white guy who understood China. Not you, not me, not that guy doing karate, not those guys over there. That's what Carl says. Only Wilhelm. You have to earn it like Wilhelm did. Richard Wilhelm. Hey, rest in peace. All right. Good eulogy, Carl. We're almost finished. Giving us a new intuition of life and meaning as a relief from the tension of arbitrary will and arrogance. Faced with the alien culture of the East, Wilhelm showed a degree of modesty highly unusual in a European. See, he's like self-effacing, kind of. We Europeans are assholes. Yeah. This one time I went to a restaurant in Darjeeling, or Gangtok, and I was with two other Americans, and like, the only way to keep up with the conversation, like, we were all very excited about the conversation we were having, the only way to keep up was to kind of like stay at the same pitch that they were on, but it seemed to like, there was like a feedback effect until like finally I realized everyone on this rooftop restaurant was just staring over at us, and we three Americans were in the middle of this restaurant loudly talking about these like crazy topics, like, oh, the stereotype is true, isn't it? We're loud. Okay. He approached it freely, without prejudice, without the assumption of knowing better. He opened heart and mind to it. You should learn a few things from him, Carl. He let himself be gripped and shaped by it. So that when he came back to Europe, he brought us not only in his spirit, but also in his being, a true image of the East. Same thing happened to my grandpa, Carl. But if Wilhelm had stayed there for 20 years, it would have been even cooler, even more like my grandpa. I'm just saying. This deep transformation was certainly not won by him without great sacrifice. For our historical premises are so entirely different from those of the East. They're different, yeah. Any two places or families or groups or individuals are going to have differences. And a lot in common. That's a universal. You can find it everywhere.
this deep transformation, what? I don't know. He let himself be gripped, yeah. Transformation, yeah. The keenness of Western consciousness and its glaring problems had to soften before the more universal, more equitable nature of the East, Western, semicolon, Western rationalism and its one-sided differentiation had to yield to Eastern breadth and simplicity. To Wilhelm, this is the end of the book. To Wilhelm, this change certainly meant not only a shifting of intellectual standpoint, but also an essential rearrangement of the component parts of his personality. The picture of the East that he has given us, free as it is of purposefulness, of any trace of arbitrariness, and any trace of arbitrariness, could never have been created in such completeness if William had not been able to let the European in himself slip into the background, like you tell people not to do. What are you saying? You're schizo, Carl, in an insulting way, not in a scientific way, and no insult to the people who are schizophrenic. Sorry, I'm not being very PC when I call you a schizo, but you're being one. Never mind, I'm sorry. Keep going, Edward. If he had allowed East and West to clash within him with unyielding harshness, he would have failed in his mission of providing us with a true picture of China. The sacrifice of the European man was unavoidable and necessary for the fulfillment of the task fate laid upon him. Wilhelm fulfilled his mission in the highest sense of the word. Not only did he make accessible to us the past treasures of the Chinese mind, but, as I have pointed out, he brought with him its spiritual root. Is that what that is? I thought he was smuggling something. Sorry. The root that has remained alive all these thousands of years and planted it in the soil of Europe. With the completion of this task, his mission reached its climax. I assumed, once he buried the root in the ground, that at a certain point there'd be a climax involved. Right? Obviously. What? No, I don't know. And unfortunately, its end also. It is unfortunate, and then you need a Kleenex, but just wait 4 minutes. You can start the process all over again. According to the law of enantiodromia, so clearly understood by the Chinese, but not by me, there grew out of the close of the one phase, the beginning of its opposite. Thus, in its culmination, yang goes over into yin. And what had been positive becomes negative. I came near to Wilhelm only in the last years of his life, and then I could observe how, with the completion of his life work, Europe and the European man impinged ever more closely on him, oppressed him, in fact. Stop it. At the same time, there developed in him the feeling that he might be standing on the brink of a great change, a revolution whose nature, it is true, he could not clearly grasp. He only knew that he faced a decisive crisis. His physical illness went parallel with this spiritual development. His dreams were filled with Chinese memories, but the pictures hovering before him were always sad and dismal. A clear proof that the Chinese contents had become negative. If that's what Carl Jung calls a proof, nothing can be sacrificed forever. Everything returns later in a changed form. And where so great a sacrifice has once taken place, when the sacrificed thing returns, it must be met by a still healthy and resistant body in order to take the shock of a great revolution. Therefore, a spiritual crisis of such dimensions often means death, if it takes place in a body weakened by disease. For now, the sacrificial knife is in the hand of him who has been sacrificed, and a death is demanded of him who was once the sacrificer. Okay, that's what Carl said in that. I'm going to go ahead and say, hey, if you have a disease, but you're interested in, like, studying Taoism, don't listen to Carl. Just go ahead and study Taoism. It's not going to make you die faster. Consult, like, a real doctor, though, a scientific doctor, and take the prescription he gives you. You can get a second opinion, or she, or they. I'm just trying to help. As you see, I have not withheld my personal ideas. Oh, no, I didn't notice. Oh, did you have personal ideas, Carl? I'm just poking fun. Because if I had not told how I experienced Wilhelm, you came near him. It's sad that your relationship couldn't have progressed beyond that. Sorry. How else would it have been possible for me to speak of him? Wilhelm's life work is of such great value to me because it explained and confirmed so much of what I had been seeking, striving for, thinking and doing in order to meet the psychic suffering of Europe. It was a tremendous experience for me to hear through him in clear language the things that had been dimly shadowed forth to me from out of the confusion of the European unconscious. In fact, I feel myself so very much enriched by him that it seems to me as if I had received more from him than from any other man. And this is also the reason I do not feel it a presumption, if I am the one to offer on the altar of his memory the gratitude and respect of all of us. Amen. He didn't say that. That was editorial commentary. Holy shit! Holy shit! We finished the book! The next time we read something on here. Oh, Editor Edward, can you bring up the thing at the top and the thing down here? Now, for those of you who are like, what thing at the top? Or they only see one thing at the top, not two things? Click here to maximize the screen on your phone. All right, now that everybody's with us, look up here, look down here. You can look wherever. It doesn't matter where you look. You can look at this, you can look at that, as I do this. Now we're gonna keep doing the I Ching. We're gonna keep doing the divinations, in other words. And then after this next book, we're gonna read that whole book. But I'm going to go ahead and put this away for the last time. I will never touch that book again, unless it's to give it away. And no, I might look something up, like, what was the thing you do when you go, you know. But not for Carl Jung stuff, just the Wilhelm translation. And now, notice everything changing. Everything changing. This is no longer the Secret of the Golden Flowers series on Chicken Philosophy, but this, the last minute or so of that episode, is the beginning, sort of, like the Christmas episode before this, the actual proper first episode of the new season. Anyway, the next time the white petal comes around, it's going to be that says Tao Te Ching, I assume, and we're going to read this. Obviously, it won't take quite as long because it's a small book, but I have a feeling I'm going to start really enjoying when the white petal on the chicken wheel comes around a lot more than I have since I've been reading Carl Jung's 1930s perspective on whether white people should get into Chinese stuff or not. That was hard to get through. And I can't tell you how happy I am to never have to read it again. I'll feel something similar, no doubt, when we finish the Martin Luther, the Tripartite Tractate, and on and on and on and so on. We still got some Carl Jung to read, but it's different Carl Jung. And I mean, shit. Those who remember, who were, you know, making memories watching the beginning of Chicken Philosophy with the Carl Jung. One of the main points of doing all this is to wrap my mind around exactly how Carl Jung kind of set in stone a lot of the basic assumptions that are held by your local yoga teacher at the Namaste yoga studio down the street. Even though there is a little bit of awareness of and attempt to go beyond that, the crazy thing is when you come to India because you want to get the non-Carl Jung version of yoga and you go to like a yoga studio or yoga school, you know, and on the first day they start quoting Carl Jung at you. It's surreal and bizarre. It's really bizarre. But anyway, so yeah, so we're going to read all that. We read Secret of the Golden Flower, which was more than I realized, an insight into, you know, Carl Jung's whole thing about, like, eventually we're going to read this lecture. It's much shorter. Or no, it's about the same size. It's Carl Jung's thoughts on Kundalini Yoga. So that was Chinese yoga, according to Carl Jung. Then eventually we're going to read Kundalini Yoga, which is Carl Jung explaining about Tantra, Kundalini, and Tantra and Kundalini, and Yoga, and Kundalini, and India, and all that Indian stuff, based on his reading of this translation of something Indian from 500 years ago or 400 years ago, The Serpent Power by Arthur Avalon. So reading all this, reading what we just finished, then we're going to read this, then we're going to read this. And at that point, I feel like I'll have a really solid picture of the, you know, the stamp that Carl Jung made on the general, like, Western, i.e. English-speaking, German-speaking, post-Protestant people's assumptions about Kundalini and Tantra, and perhaps even the assumptions of some of the post-British colonial period Indians on their own culture. And it's not my place to explain to people, no, my ancestors fucked up your perspective on your own culture. Here's what your culture really is. I don't presume to ever, even as an old man with a long beard, be in a position to do that. But though a star may be unreachable, we're going to walk that direction. We're going to learn for ourselves so that we can have a clearer picture of what this one man's thing was, what his unique fingerprint was on a lot of our assumptions about yoga, tantra, kundalini, chakras, and meditation, and India, and Indian philosophy. So that we can say thank you for that, thank you for the work you did, but also peel off the fingerprint, and if we want to, step through the portal to the other side and see what's actually there. Do the thing Carl says not to do. Don't you dare lose your roots and just dive into someone else's culture. Get it all through me and Wilhelm. Okay, Carl. No, but I mean, yeah. Like maybe he's like the training wheels on the bicycle of Eastern philosophy for some folks in 1930. I'll give him that. Good being training wheels for white people in 1930, Carl. You did a good job doing that. And thank you in general. You did a lot of work. I don't mean to talk shit, but I think it's worth going through with a fine-tooth comb and improving upon in order to understand, to build upon, to stand on the shoulders of Martin Luther and Carl Jung, as well as kick him in the back of the head every now and then. You know. Anyway, so this is up next. On this point of the wheel, this is the last, this is part 38, you'll never see it again. So the next time the white petal comes up, it'll say Tao Te Ching part 1. It'll be Chicken Philosophy, Tao Te Ching Part 1, a brand new playlist, a whole new thing. And then we'll go from there. Thank you for being here all the way through to the end. Be sure to like and subscribe and all that good stuff. Share it with your friends if you want to. I don't know. Maybe they'll think you're weird. So don't share with your friends. But do share with your friends. Don't share with your friends. Whatever. Do what you want. Do what thou wilt if you want to. Until next time.